Welcome to the Making of a Thought Leader podcast. This podcast is designed to encourage entrepreneurs to build their thought leadership in a simplified and a systematic way. I'm your host, Surbhi Dedia, brand strategist, entrepreneur, founder of Digital Genie, and also founder of jotmybio.com. I'm passionate to help fellow entrepreneurs, executives, and individuals to think and thrive on their thought leadership. So grab your headset, turn up the volume, and join me here to get the boost of encouragement you need to build your thought leadership every episode. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode on the Making of a Thought Leader podcast. I'm very excited about today's episode, not only because we are talking about videos for building thought leadership, but because I'm joined by the very talented Reem Alhuni on this episode. Reem will be sharing all about why the video era is now, how anyone who is interested in building thought leadership should look at videos as an important way to communicate. Also, she will be sharing her journey from always being behind the camera to getting in front of it, and how we all can do some mindset work before getting in front of the camera. For those who may not know Reem yet, she runs an award-winning production company, TI 22 Films, which was founded in 2011 in Dubai. In 2014, she started Dubai On Demand as an online presenter-led lifestyle channel featuring a host of well-known Dubai personalities where the world of branded content and influencer marketing collide. With the pandemic, Reem identified a need for business owners to start creating their videos to become visible and launched her DIY Video Academy, offering online courses to empower business professionals to start using video and gain the confidence to embrace their niche on camera. Reem's latest adventure was executive producing the daily live TV show Studio Expo for Expo 2020. The show aired daily, featuring a wide range of guests and topics from presidents to Michelin stars, chefs to celebrity performers to dignitaries from around the world. Reem has served as the jury of the New York Festival Television and Film Awards for 7 years and is regularly called to speak at events. She also supports organizations as a media consultant and video strategist, and runs both in-house and public workshops to support entities with their video strategy. Now, this episode is packed with interesting examples, quirky ideas, and laughs. So let's get straight in and meet Reem. Hello, Reem. Welcome to the Making of a Thought Leader podcast. It is absolutely my pleasure to have you on board today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Reem, in our conversations, you bring upon this thing about video era is now. That's your constant statement and message. So tell me a little bit more about the statement, video era is now.
I think it's about time, to be honest. I'm a little biased because obviously I've been in this industry for over 20 years. So I remember a time when I used to meet people and talk about video, and it was quite possibly on the bottom of their to-do list. It was especially, you know, when they're looking at marketing agendas and where they're going to spend their money. Video was never at the top. You know, it was always sort of your website was number one. Possibly they'd look at SEO, they'd look at other marketing tools, and video just always felt like a nice to have. And I think with COVID, especially with COVID, we saw a huge increase in both content consumption and content creation. The percentage actually increased to 60% during COVID, right? People were consuming 60% more content. What's super interesting is that when people started to go back to work, that percentage increased even more. So it went up to 80%. So it goes to show that there is a hunger and an appetite to consume more and more content. But along with consuming it, you have to create it. So what's ended up happening is this pressure to now output a lot more than you used to. So now the conversations I'm having with anyone in the marketing sphere or business owners to be really different. Video has now gone from being the bottom of the list to coming up to the top of the list, where it's no longer a nice to have, it's now a must have. We are in an era where everyone enjoys consuming content. They want to consume more of it. Their attention spans are really low, so you have to make it super interesting. And honestly, if you're not capitalizing on that trend right now, you may miss the boat, because as much as I believe that video is the era now, you know, there's a lot of talk about so many other interesting concepts in the digital space. So you may have to move even further and start investigating and exploring those in the coming years. So take advantage of video now whilst it's hot.
You were saying that attention spans are so low. So what you are indicating here is the short, snappy, quick to the point video.
I actually believe there's a space for all types of content, but I do agree that if you're capturing someone's interest and attention for the very first time, the content has to be short. You know, we hear things like people, you need to grab people's attention the first 3 seconds, the first 5 seconds, the first 8 seconds. That's a really short amount of time to grab someone's interest. And then beyond that, the retention is really low. People aren't really watching videos that are longer than 45 seconds to a minute. So if you're sitting there reeling off this really long video content and hoping you're going to catch new customers, it's pretty challenging because people just don't have that time. The first thing I do whenever anyone sends me a video is look at the duration. And I'm confident, you know, most of the people listening do the same thing. You look at the duration and you think, do I have time to listen to this right now? And it's either a yes, okay, if it's under a minute, I'll give it a go. If it's over a minute, nah, I can't be bothered, and you skip it. So keep in mind that when you're trying to appeal to a new audience, the shorter the better, get their interest. Having said that, if you know you have an engaged audience, they're already sold on you. They already want to hear what you have to say. So that's where the space comes for longer video content. Different durations work for different audiences, but absolutely for people who are just stumbling on you for the first time, the shorter the better.
Yeah. I feel being in the industry for many years now, my career started into pushing for video as a corporate video. Like, what do you do, who you are, what do you sell, who's your customer, that kind of storyline. And now I think it's completely turned on its head, meaning having a shorter video where it's like a hook, literally, to get engaged with you. In the past, this was not the case. It absolutely was not the case. And in fact, it was just YouTube, where you just go, probably upload it as a public domain or some of the other channels like your website or, you know, even in your corporate spiel presentations where you actually present your corporate videos. And that was a completely different ballgame. And what we're talking about now is the next two steps after that short hook that you presented in a video format. Also, I feel like this tendency that all of us are getting to where we are like reels, right? Like swiping off reels after reels. And that is like a huge entertainment component to it. What do you think about this like intersection between content, like knowledge content and entertainment? What's happening there?
So I generally believe that the best kinds of content either educate you or entertain you. Mm-hmm. You need to try and find which one you're strong at. Like, I know that I'm not particularly good at entertaining people. So I go heavy on the education and information. You want to give people a reason to keep coming back for more. So for me, if I'm educating people, I'm giving them tips, knowledge, something they're going to learn from, they're going to want to come back because they can apply the tips that I'm giving them. Entertainment is the opposite side of the spectrum. If I come to you, I enjoy it, I laugh, I find it funny, I'm going to want to come back because at the moment, people want to be distracted. They want something entertaining and engaging. So I think look at where you are, your industry, what the message is. If you're capable of entertaining someone, then go for that route because some of the most popular content out there is comedy. However, I'm a bit weary of it because I do think it's subjective. I do think it's not everyone's going to like what you put out there. So the safer bet, especially because I work with a lot of business owners and thought leaders, and I know we're talking about being a thought leader, the safer bet is usually the education information route. Having said that, if you're able to do both, then you've got that lucky balance where hopefully you can appeal to both audiences. But just to comment on your earlier point, still important to have that video that tells people who you are, what you do, what your services are, because nowadays people are stumbling on you online, and that's where they're being informed and educated about your company and what you do. But what I feel is really important is leveraging all the social media platforms and having that consistent content and getting more and more visible by putting yourself out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings me to this point, is how much is too much or how much is enough? So when you say that short videos and other kind of content, how much, according to you, what is the ideal kind of a frequency or the amount that people should be putting out there?
So I think that's a great question. And I'm a big believer in consistency. So I'm going to answer in a way that probably isn't popular, but I think whatever you can do consistently. So if you are capable of putting out a video every day, do it. You're going to get the results. If you are capable of putting it out two or three times a week, do that. If you're only capable of doing it at, I would say, a minimum of once a week, then do that. The key to all of this is the consistency and what your capabilities are to churn that content out. I personally know that I can put one out a week. That's a guarantee. Right? So I've stuck with the consistent schedule of putting one new video out per week. If I happen to be able to put out other videos, they're kind of bonuses, you know, so my audience knows that they can expect one fresh new piece of content from me, which is usually education, information, I'm giving people tips, something of that sort. Everything else beyond that is a bonus. I'm a big fan of Gary Vee. He has like tons of content out every day, but he has a whole team that supports him in doing that. You know, so you need to kind of think, do you have the resources to help you churn that out? And if not, the simple answer is do what you can do consistently, because that's what gets you the results.
Right. I agree to your point completely, because there's also this whole concept that people are now aware of about the algorithm. So at the time, only 30% of your audience is actually seeing it online because the way it appears on their stream. So even if you're doing consistently for a week, there is always this opportunity for bringing the past video up again to kind of bonus and supplement your other content pieces that you want to put it out. But I think what you said is really important and often forgotten, you know, because we all get very ambitious. Like people get doing reels today or any kind of other content, they just get onto it and say, keep doing it for a while, and there is no continuity. So there's this disconnect that comes with that distraction.
I just want to add to that. I do regular coaching programs and consult with different CEOs. And when they start, you know, planning their video content, most of them are overambitious. Like most of them, they have all these amazing ideas, which they are amazing ideas. But one of the key components that we go through is what is the feasibility of you being able to execute this on a consistent basis? And often like the one that like gets people excited is the idea of interviewing others. They often say, I'm going to start an interview series and I'm going to interview CEOs. Amazing. Then you go, how many CEOs do you know? Well, I know quite a few. Great. Have you tried to get into their diaries recently? Do you know how difficult it is to be able to pull this off on a consistent basis? So then I kind of set them this exercise of like, just try and forget the video. Just try and schedule the time on a consistent basis and see what happens. And when those small little exercises start to kind of fall flat, they realize that as great as an idea that is, that it's not going to be consistent, which is why the most consistent type of video is what I call a piece to camera, which is you speaking to camera, giving information and tips, because you're not reliant on anyone else or any other factors. And you know, you can churn that out, which is why my videos are super simple. My weekly videos are really, really simple, because I want to be able to ensure that I can put one out every week, you know? So you have to go for the type of video that doesn't offer any hurdles and you know you can actually accomplish. So yes, ambition is always a big thing when you start this journey, but looking at the feasibility of the idea is also important.
You really nailed it. I really love the tactics that you said. At least just get scheduling and then we'll talk about the video later. This was fantastic. All right, talking about the CEO, we are talking about this thought leader who is obviously very busy. And video, even if they know with all the statistics, all the competition that is doing video,
it doesn't come naturally to everyone. You and me on this call, we are seeing each other and we are talking. It is natural. We are comfortable. But when it is just facing the camera and talking to oblivion, it's like, it's not something that we do naturally. So what would you say to this CEO or the thought leader who's saying, I can't do the camera piece?
I'm super passionate about this message because I get told this all the time. A day doesn't go by where I haven't spoken to someone who's like, oh, it's not for me. You know, I feel just really uncomfortable, or I'm really shy. I just feel a bit self-conscious. And I get it. I actually truly get it because I'm someone who always felt that way. And I've been in this industry a really long time, but I've always been behind the camera. So to push myself to get in front of it really took a lot, you know, because I same as everyone else. I understand the statistics. I understand the logic. I understand what it's going to do for my business. But the minute I got in front of it, I felt really nervous. And, you know, also, you know, other things come to play. It becomes a confidence issue and a self-consciousness issue. Like, I know I'm getting quite gray and I know that I'm not always looking the way I want to look. I learned through practice that people don't care. Like, people are not watching my videos because they're trying to figure out how many new gray strands I have this week, you know. They're watching my videos because I'm sharing useful information. And I think once people start to understand, it's not about the image, it's about the knowledge. So focus on, embrace your knowledge, focus on what you have to share. And something very interesting starts to happen when you talk about something you're knowledgeable in. The minute you start talking about it, that kind of takes over. So the reason even us chatting is quite comfortable is because I'm very confident in video. So whatever question you throw at me, I'm quite comfortable and I know I can answer those questions. However, if you suddenly ask me about something I don't know very much about, that's when the nerves come in and that's where you're like, oh, how am I going to sound? What do I look like? You know, so what I would encourage people to do is just talk about information you know. About information that you say day in, day out. You know, what do you discuss with your teams? What do you discuss with your clients? Share, you know, information that comes naturally to you. Because in that situation, it removes one hurdle where you're no longer worried about what you're going to say. And it's the practice. It's honestly just keep doing it. And you're not going to be happy with those first few videos. That's normal. No one is happy with them. But you just keep doing it and understand that as long as you're educating people and informing them, they're going to keep coming back for more because that's actually all they care about.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it is something very similar to the podcast as well. Like, you're talking into the mic, into oblivion. You don't know who is there. If there's somebody in front of you, you can judge from their body language, if they're understanding, that they're getting interested in it or not, all of that. But when it comes to video or a podcast, it has that initial hesitation. Like, you know the content, you know what you're going to say, and then at the same time you're like, whether am I saying the right word, whether this sounds better, how do I sound? Like, for me, that happened with me in the podcast as well. Like, I'm like, I sound so soft otherwise I'm a loud person. So all those things come to play.
But, you know, in a lot of ways it's a bit more liberating because, you know, when you're talking to a camera, I don't know who's on the other side. I don't need to suddenly catch someone's eye or, you know, feel extra self-conscious. For in my mind, it doesn't matter. You don't know who the audience is. So that can actually help as opposed to hinder in a lot of ways. And to answer your other point, to be honest, like, I never over-scrutinize anything I put out, ever. Mm-hmm. You know, from my perspective, it's like, I know the information I want to put out. I don't even structure it that fully because the more obstacles you give yourself, the harder it's going to be for you to do. So I think about the message that I want to share and I want to keep it under a minute. So with that, I often, I'm very clear about my first sentence. So as long as my first sentence grabs someone's attention, that one I might memorize. So the first sentence is usually a statistic, a question, some kind of hook, which, you know, I use statistics because people go, oh my God, I didn't know that. And I use questions because people go, oh my God, that sounds like me. I need to listen. So I use one of those two. And then I have my key message and a call to action at the end. I don't memorize it, you know, because I don't want that hurdle. I say it. If I'm happy that I've been able to do it in under a minute, I often don't watch it. It gets edited and I post it and you move on to the next one. So in terms of overanalyzing or scrutinizing how you look or how you sound, as long as the message is clear and I feel that people are going to learn something from this, that's it. And you have to get into that practice of like, it's fine. You're not totally happy. Move on. There's another one tomorrow.
Okay. So, you know, on this note, I want to ask you, You were saying that you were always behind the camera and it took you some kind of an effort to come in the front. Now, when you got to the front, did you come with a strategy, which means a commitment? Like, I'll do this many videos. It will be all under a minute. How did you plan this? And did you do all by yourself?
To answer your question, I felt the need to start pushing myself in front of the camera because I've always been behind the camera, but I also run a business, you know. So running a business, I understand the importance of people connecting with me, you know, and at the end of the day, you know, people connect with people. So as long as I'm putting myself out there, there's a higher chance of people, I think it's as high as 77%. 77% of people are more likely to do business with you if they're following the CEO on social media and if you're active with video content. That is a super high percentage. So, you know, understanding all these statistics is what pushed me to start doing it for myself, you know, because I can't be in this industry, understand the numbers and still not be doing it. And that's, you know, that's actually what pushed me. And the embarrassment, to be honest, the embarrassment that I run a group of video companies and I'm hesitating on putting myself on video. It was almost like one of those challenges I had to overcome. Yeah. And then actually what really pushed me is, you know, one of my brands, Dubai On Demand, we started offering these monthly packages and this membership where people would film with us one day a month. We create these four videos and it keeps them consistent. And that was the extra push, because if I'm standing out there telling other CEOs they need to be doing this and this is how they do it and we're going to film with you one day, then I better be doing it myself, because I can't afford for anyone to turn around and say, well, hang on, you're not doing it. Where are your videos? So it definitely became a situation where, you know, I have to be doing what I'm preaching, you know, so that was the extra push. And yes, I run a group of video companies, so I'm fortunate enough to have in-house resources, and that's how I get my content done. I batch it. So I will plan what I want to do in the coming month, if possible more, and get in and just record them all. You know, I'll get a bunch of different shirts and tops and just change in between as, you know, one of the strategies, and just get them done. Because often when you're a busy person, that's the only way you can get all of your content done effectively without consuming too much time. But I can honestly say I didn't start that planned. I started just wanting to get over the hurdle, started just wanting to start doing one, just start doing two, just start, you know, just get going. But it was launching our membership for our members that made me, you know, so now I effectively do everything that I preach to our members. I do for myself as well, because I think that's super important if you're teaching something that you should be doing it.
Yeah, in your case, definitely. And that was your personal example. Can you share some example where you have convinced a person to do videos and they have seen a lot of results?
Absolutely. I mean, this happens regularly, and it makes my eyes go like pop wide open, because it would surprise you the number of people who hesitate to get started. And you never would have thought that they had any hesitation to begin with. I think most people in Dubai or in the UAE are familiar with Lucy Chow. She is in the financial space. She runs a Women Angel Investment Network. Very credible, visible person. And I remember having a chat with her a few years ago where I basically said to her, look, you need to start creating video content. And she was so hesitant. And I was just shocked, because I couldn't believe that someone who is that visible, you know, would hesitate on doing something like this. And we kind of discussed it a bit more, and trying to dig and understand what was the hesitation. And hers was a bit different, actually. She said that she didn't think anyone would want to watch her content. She said, you know, what do I have to add? People can just Google all the information they're looking for. And I just thought that was fascinating, because, you know, everyone has a voice and everyone has a perspective. And she happens to be a Chinese female entrepreneur, investor in the Middle East. And, you know, I highlighted to her that I'm not aware of anyone who has that specific perspective. And I know so many business owners who'd want to ask her questions and have access. And she agreed to get started on that journey. And I think she was pretty consistent with her video content. We were producing it for around 2 years. And she, by the end of that, she was announced one of LinkedIn's top 15 voices in MENA. And to me, that's amazing. It's amazing to see that growth that's happened. So, yes, she's visible, but the video content definitely contributed, because people are now visibly seeing her and connecting with her. And that's from someone who was pretty confident and pretty credible. So it goes to show, it doesn't really matter who you are. you have the same thought process, you have the same hesitation, and you just need to get over it.
And when you're saying this example, it almost felt like you are a counselor. You know, you were doing this whole mindset, goal setting kind of an exercise with your client to get them to see beyond their walls of, am I going the
I'm
right
so
path
glad
here?
You said that, because I often feel like a counselor. Often it's one of those where, because creating videos a lot of the time is a confidence exercise. It's a confidence mm-hmm. exercise. It's a mindset shift. It's so many other things other than technical. So you kind of need to get over all those hurdles first before you can start creating videos. Often my first few conversations, which is why I end up having so many coaching clients or consulting clients, is because a lot of them either don't know what to say, don't know how to start, feel uncomfortable on camera, don't believe they have something, you know, have the credibility. You know, there's a lot, and I would never call myself a counselor. I'm not a qualified counselor, just to put this out there. But I've gone through these thoughts myself. I've been able to overcome them myself, and I've now been able to help hundreds overcome it as well. So I kind of understand the thought process that goes into it, and I've realized that it's few thoughts that can help push you over and get you started with your video content. And it's never the technology. It's always you.
Yeah. Talking of technology, video has come up a long way, right? Like, your career has been exemplary, from being on BBC to doing your own show at Expo. So how do you think technology has helped you in your journey or in your timeline of doing videos? What role has technology played, and how you had to kind of constantly upgrade, adapt to it? Like, what happened there?
I mean, I'm in an industry which changes consistently. You know, if mm-hmm. I happen to like not learn or not stay up to date for a week, I'm already out of date. You know, mm-hmm. so you kind of always have to be learning and always have to know what's new, how things are changing, how things are evolving. As technology has evolved, things have got easier, things have got simpler. You don't need as much equipment as you used to. I think the levels that mobile phones have progressed, where cameras yeah. on mobile phones are delivering pretty decent quality. And I think that's great, because it just means that it removes another barrier from people just starting. So I often just tell people, in my world, I've worked on big TV shows with big setups and big cameras, but you all have a phone which mm-hmm. probably has a pretty decent camera. Just start with that, because mm-hmm. that's enough to get you going. And yeah, it's just fascinating. And who knows what's going to happen next, you know? So mm-hmm. it's one of those where you're spot on in saying it changes, but you have to stay up to date in order to really make use of new innovation.
Yeah, it almost felt like you're saying technology has taken out the technical out of it completely. The advancement in technology has got the technical out of it.
It has. And I think that's great. And that's why, coming back to what I said earlier, people who don't start with video, technology is not the barrier. It always comes down to mindset and confidence and planning, actually. If you're able to tick those three boxes, then you can get started.
Yes, absolutely. This was fantastic, Adeem. How are you focusing on building your own thought leadership? Like, one of the things that I think it helps to know about thought leadership is that you've got to be systematic and you've got to be consistent. And some of these points you've already done. What I think the audience would like to know is, how do you consistently and systematically think about building your own thought leadership in today's time?
I think one of the key questions to ask yourself is, what do you want to be known for? You know, so once you're able to answer that question, that really dictates the kind of content you're going to put out there. So, you know, often when I'm working with people, it's kind of digging down, you know, on that specific question. So to give you an example, we work with a chef. We've worked with him for about 3 years, Chef Sven, and he runs Baker's Kitchen, which is a really yeah. popular bakery in Dubai. But what was really interesting when we started this discussion is, like, what do you want to be known for? When you think of baking, you think of so many different things, but he wanted to be known for bread. Like, that is the specific thing he wanted to be known for. So it was like, great. Okay. And I've learned so much about bread since then. Apparently, like, there are over 300 types of sourdough and all these other things.
Oh, that's news.
Yeah, very interesting. And so when we were kind of thinking about his content plan, I was like, okay, how do we really embrace your knowledge on bread? And for his video content, we came up with a brand. We call it The Truth About Bread. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is that, you know, when you're searching, you know, Googling, you type in baker, you'll get a whole bunch of people. But when you type in bread baker, there are only like a couple of people who are going to pop up, right? So you want to really answer that question for yourself and then plan your content accordingly. Right. So for me, I want to be known as a video content expert. That's what I want to be known as. Although having said that, I often give advice and tips on content creation in general. So I have to be careful that I give some knowledge about content creation. So consistency, the rule of consistency applies to any content you put out there, right? But my videos are always about video content. So I always want to make sure that I'm giving people tips and advice that will position myself as a video expert that they will keep coming back to learn or to grow or to get some new information. I also believe when you're positioning yourself as a thought leader, know where your strengths are, know where your weaknesses are. I'm someone who I genuinely love LinkedIn. I'm on it regularly. I'm more of a business focused person than a personal person. What I mean by that is I'm unlikely to have conversations about your dogs and your pets and your kids. That's not my world, but I will have conversations about your business and your team and what you're doing to grow. That's just who I am and my interests. So I'm more aligned with being consistent on LinkedIn than I am on Facebook. That's not my space. However, a different business owner who may just be more, either personality may be different, where they're more personable, or their business is in that space, will find that Facebook is the place for them to be consistent, or Instagram. So I'm very conscious about where I want to be known as a thought leader. So for me, it's LinkedIn. So I have a very consistent LinkedIn strategy. And with LinkedIn, I then look at what kind of content do people want to consume. So there's definitely my pillar, which is my video content at least once a week. I definitely make sure that at least a couple of other posts during the week give knowledge, information, advice. But I also want to showcase some of the work that I'm doing.
Right.
And I want to showcase some of the people I'm working with or some of the achievements that I have. So at least a couple of the other posts during the week will showcase that. I think LinkedIn is becoming a space where we're starting to get to know people a little more. Yeah. So I try and give it my personal spin on that activity or on that client. And I've realized that that's working really well because people seem to enjoy getting to know you a little bit more through your work or through your activities. But it's also, you never know who resonates with what type of content. And that's been very interesting. I've had several examples recently where these are old connections. These are people who've known me for years, but being consistent has kept me top of mind. And, you know, that's when new opportunities come up. So it's worth it. And it's so fascinating. Like I did a post at Expo on Libya's Expo National Day, right?
Yeah,
because a lot of people don't know I'm from Libya. And it was one of those moments where I just thought, you know what? I didn't overthink it. It was just like, I want to share something about who I am. And obviously posting it, it was very clear that I'm at Expo. It's still business. It's still part of my work life. But you'd be surprised how many people I've seen or have spoken to. It's like, oh, I saw your post on Libya. I never knew that about Libya. I didn't know you were. And it's quite a simple post, but I seem to have connected with people on a different level just because they know I'm from Libya and they got a bit of an insight into my thoughts, you know?
Right.
So you just never know what's going to connect with who. And I never would have guessed that that post would connect with people in that way. So that's what's kind of opened it up for me and made me think like, you know what? Let's experiment a bit. Let's put out content and see what happens. I'm a massive believer of thinking big and Tony Robbins and visualization. So I just recently decided to post some content about vision boards because I use vision boards. I believe in them. Again, nothing to do with video, although I did post a video talking about it. And again, that's another one that seems to have had like a huge response because it's connected with people in a different way. I'm still using my video analogy. I'm still talking about what I do in my business. I'm just showing a different side of who I am and how that connects to my business. And I think that's what people may need to start doing more and more of with their content to just appeal to new people and see where the connections can be.
True. And I feel that gives that trust. I think that authenticity and trust, these two words are very often spoken these days or talked about, but how does one get authentic, right? This question really bothers me. How do you really come across authentic? For you yourself, you're authentic, but then for the person you may not be. But I think what you just said opens up this whole discussion area where you say whatever you are doing, whatever you're thinking, whatever you apply in your daily life, you can share these things, because that adds that layer in people's perception about you, people's trust on you, and they get to know you more authentically rather than just one area that you constantly speak about. And that again brings to the point of consistency, because you want to be consistent in one area of video that you think that is what you want to be known for. But hey, all these different posts that you've experimented with has given you like this check and balance that, oh, this is not resonated well, but this is not, or this I could do better in a different way. But yeah, that post on Libya completely, I'm one of those many people who probably responded and said, wow, I didn't know that you're from Libya, and I didn't know these things about Libya. It opens up that perception in other people's minds. So fantastic. You spoke about Expo. Oh my God. I can't believe that I know you, Reem, and you were at Expo doing what I think is just unfathomable. I can't believe that 6 months you were producing a show daily. Daily. Wow. Tell us all about it, please.
Well, if I was going to tell you all about it, it would probably be a very, very long time. but yes, it was an amazing experience. It was actually something that's been 2 years in the making, although everyone kind of obviously is focused on that 6 month intensive period. It was amazing to be able to work on such an exciting project, which had a global audience. We were working with over 192 countries, which means in itself, you're exposed to so many different cultures and just different ways of doing things, having so many stakeholders in it on it. So it was so important that everything went off, you know, successfully, especially when you're interviewing world leaders and presidents and dignitaries and celebrities, and you can't afford for anything to go wrong. And you're live. So honestly, you know, the pressure is on. Often in the world of video, you can edit and correct and make things look pretty. But when you're live, you're live. So that adds a whole new layer to getting things right. And, you know, it was not easy, especially because I can't honestly say any of us really knew what we were getting into. Like, I personally had not been to an expo before. Everyone heard expo, expo, expo. But what is it until you're actually there and see it? And especially because our studios were based in the Expo Media Center, just overlooking Al Wasl. So new facilities as well. Whenever you have a new facility, you're going to be faced with a lot of challenges and the new teams and just a lot of newness. And the next thing you know, you're live with all this newness trying to pull it off. So for sure, the first month was difficult. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of long hours, especially because you're in a situation where things were changing every day, and there are like national days for different countries every day, and every country had its own like plan and its own protocol. But it was so enjoyable and something that I would never replace, as tiring as it was. But it's one of those experiences that you look back on, and I'm just so glad we were able to successfully deliver every day live every day. Yeah. And yeah, I look back on it and some, it was kind of a bit of like fog, and could just think, did it happen? Did it really happen? Yeah. But yeah, amazing experience.
That's an interesting topic. Although I must mention here that the listener should go onto your profile and look back all the posts that you were putting on LinkedIn consistently while you were at Expo. And that fascinated me, because I mean, being from the marketing and knowing you, I feel that there was so much happening at Expo. How did you even have the time to do it on LinkedIn? It was just so committed. I can feel that there was such a sense of ownership and commitment that you had, that every day I must do something to let the world know about this. And that was like a window for us to look into Expo from a very different way.
Honestly, like what you saw on my LinkedIn profile was like a fraction, a tiny, sure. tiny yes. fraction yes. of what was happening on a daily basis.
Sure.
And I look back and I wish I'd actually captured a lot more, to be honest. But yes, uh-huh. we were in the thick of it and there's a lot going on. So it was very difficult to keep my own marketing and branding going. But yeah, it's definitely the commitment. Believe it or not, it's in my diary every day. LinkedIn is in my diary as a thing wow. to do mm-hmm. every day. Yeah. Because it's not in my diary, there's a high chance I'll miss it or I'll skip it. And that's how important it is to me. And I also believe that unless you make time for things and you schedule them, they won't happen. And that's like one of the biggest parts of like content creation and content scheduling and all of it. So even whilst I was at Expo, I was super conscious about, did I do my LinkedIn post today? And if I didn't, it's like, oh my God, what, you know, why haven't I, what can I change? Or how can I plan ahead? Or like, what are the pillars that I have? Or I think I had like one day where I managed to go into our studio for a couple of hours. And I just like, I think I churned out about 8 videos that day. And I consciously knew this was going to take me through the next 2 months at Expo. So right. You have to put those plans in place, especially if you're going into a busy period, because I've learned that I can't afford to not be visible. And something that I'm always telling people, if you're not visible, you're invisible. and that's the key. So, you know, however busy you are, make the time. And yeah, if I'm able to do it during Expo, then you can do it during whatever it is you're up to.
Yes, fantastic. Okay, I'm just thinking the kind of mental, physical, and emotional endurance that it may have put you through. Like, it is a rigor that you show up every day, signed up for long hours. I'm sure you had no social life during those days or 6 months.
That's very, very accurate. Very accurate. but you know what was funny? It kind of reminded me of when I started in this industry. So, you know, I'm in an industry which is known for kind of long hours and weekends and late nights. And that's what the TV film industry is, to be honest. Because believe it or not, the best times to film anything are always sunrise and sunset. So guess what? You're always filming from before sunrise till after sunset. And I remember when I started in the industry, I think it was about 23, 24 years ago, what you have to do to prove yourself to get in. So you kind of work around the clock. I trained in London, and I have to say, like, I remember my training as being quite grueling. And being at Expo just brought loads of flashbacks, you know, because it was just one of those things where it was so new. It was so new, and it was so important that it went well. And when it's that important, it's not one of those things where you delegate to the planet. Like, I personally was there every day. There were days I slept there, just to put this in perspective, because it was so important that we had all our content right and that we filmed it right and that everything went smoothly. And if it didn't, you know, what can we fix for tomorrow? That's the thing about daily. The minute you get off air, you've got another show in less than 24 hours. So you have to like start planning all over again and just try and be as organized as possible. It was grueling. And, you know, I have to say, I've always been a hard worker. But one of the things that has always driven me through is being super positive, which drives people crazy. But it's one of those things where right from the get-go in the morning, we were starting at 6 a.m. every morning. And just for the record, I hate waking up in the morning. I am not a morning person in any way, shape, or form. So this just felt like an added kind of trial on top of things. Everyone knows this. The first question I ask is, how are you? And the answer needs to be, I'm amazing. So if anyone even turns around and says, oh, I don't know. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? What's going on? No, I'm amazing. Great. That's what I thought you said. And you have to keep a very positive attitude throughout. And because I'm working with a big team, I took on a lot of extra people for Expo. So we ended up being a significant team to pull off a daily live show. And it all comes from you. So if I'm positive, I believe it can happen. And I'm there along with them every day. And I'm there at night. You know what? Everyone else is positive and everyone else has that energy and everyone else wants to make it work. So I learned that a long time ago, that if I'm expecting things to happen around me, and no matter how big they are, then I need to behave and act the way I want the team to behave and act. So as grueling as it was, if you go through it positively, smiling, making sure everyone realizes that we need to maintain a positive environment for us to accomplish something big, then it happens. And I have a super low tolerance for negativity, like super low. You know, I've asked people to leave just because they've been super negative. I just think that's not the environment that I need to be around, or I can be around, to pull off something of this scale. It has to always be safe, supportive, and positive.
I'm thinking that probably you had like this checklist, or maybe you, before reaching the studio, you kind of meditated, just get in that Zen space. To go there, you can't be positive unless you have that something in you, like, or you've done something that allows you to be positive.
I'm not the type of person who meditates. I'm not a meditator. I'm someone who, the minute I close my eyes, like my brain races through like all the 100 things I should have done or could have done. You know, that's not who I am. And yes, I've read all the books and I've heard every, you know, the importance of being peace and quiet. I get it. For me, it's a decision, you know? So it's not about putting myself into a state. It's a decision. It's like, I've decided I'm going to be amazing today. And I've decided everyone else is going to be. And no matter how I may be feeling internally, the more I keep repeating it, changes you. I physically feel that change. You know, when I meet someone in the morning,
affirmations, yeah.
Oh, how are you? And they go, I'm amazing too. And suddenly you've become what you say, you know? So the point I'm trying to make is, especially for those who maybe aren't the meditators and listening to this, you know, it's not about that for me, at least. It's about deciding that is the state you're going to be in. On a daily basis, and deciding that everyone around you needs to be on a similar wavelength for things to work.
True. And I think this is a very nice technique to adopt for people who want to, who are the non-meditators, or, you know, I mean, meditating is just one example. There could be other things, right? Like people do to get into that space. Maybe somebody eats like a chocolate bar, listens to high energy music, things like that, right? There are tons of things people can do to get into that A player state, right? Like the best of yourself. Did you evolve into a new person altogether after Expo? Like, did it kind of reshape you in a different way?
That's a great question. I'm not sure if it reshaped me. I think it reminded me of what I enjoy doing. I used to produce a lot of live TV content before I started my company. So that's like almost over 11 years ago. When I was at Dubai One, and even prior to that. So there's a specific energy that you get when you do live shows, which is very difficult to replace. Everything else suddenly feels incredibly slow compared to live TV shows. I realized also, I've built TI22 Films over the last 11 years. We work with one from government to large organizations. And often there's a certain way you need to do things. There's certain approaches you need to take. You don't always agree. But it's at the end of the day, they're clients, and you learn how to service clients. But when you're doing a TV show, you know, it's great to have that kind of editorial angle, and I didn't want to say editorial control, but it is having kind of a say in the content that you're putting out and how you're going to put it out. And when you're exec producing a TV show, then you've had a say in, you know, all the elements that put that show together, whether it be the name, the presenters, the look, the set. You know, it really starts to feel, you know, you own that project. And I quite enjoyed that, and it kind of reminded me of, I've always loved film and TV. Like, this has always been my world since I was a kid. But going through this Expo experience reminded me of what I enjoy most in that world. And I think coming out of it now, I'm really keen for the next TV project and just to see, where do I go from here? As opposed to, I don't want to settle anymore. I don't want to settle for my daily, as much as I love them and I appreciate them, you know, all my corporate clients, there's a place for that. But it's also about finding the type of projects that fulfill you. And I realized that this was a kind of project that gave me a new challenge. You know, it gave me something new to work on, because after you've been in the industry as long as I have, it starts to get a little bit routine. Yeah. So you want to always be learning, you want to always be evolving, and you always want to be trying something different. And this definitely ticked those boxes for me. Yeah. So it's like, where do you go from here? You know, so what's the next challenge? Okay. That's kind of what I'm looking for now.
You really like to be on the edge, isn't it?
Totally. You know, otherwise, what's the point? You know, it's like you want to keep evolving. And I think, you know, something we discussed earlier is that I'm in an industry that does evolve. I'm in an industry that changes all the time. And thankfully, I think that works with my personality, because I'll learn something new. Mm. I'm the type of person who will learn something new, and then tomorrow I'll be like, how do we apply this? You know, because it's that's how you keep evolving in your business as well. It's like, how do we use the new technology, or how do we use this new concept, or, oh, wow, that idea has worked really well in this way. Or sometimes, to be honest, I watch a lot of TV.
So I'll ask you, do you watch so much?
I watch a lot.
Yeah, okay.
I watch a lot. And for me, it's like, when I'm watching, I'm also kind of observing, and I'm taking stuff in, and I'm, you know, sometimes like, oh, that's an interesting way to do that. And it kind of ends up kind of contributing or inspiring a new idea that we may apply on some content that we're producing. So that feeds me. So I'm always learning. I'm always watching. I'm always wanting to know what other markets are doing. And yeah, Expo was like that on like Superdrive, because you were exposed to so much. And it's like, okay, great. How do we now take that to the next level?
Right. So what kind of TV shows do you see? What inspires you to go back to the TV or video content?
I watch so much content. It's not even funny. But I'm someone who I often look at what's being rated in other places. So if something's had a good review in another country or something, I want to know like what's standing out somewhere else. I'm a big fan of just dramas. And, you know, I've got like a bunch of Netflix shows that I follow. So at the moment, just to give you an idea, I'm watching The Offer, right? And The Offer is like, for those of you who don't know, it's a Paramount series that's been inspired on the book and the story of making The Godfather. And I'm a big fan of The Godfather. But what's interesting about watching The Offer is that they've tried to, in the series, kind of follow a similar style to The Godfather, the movie. There are places in it where I'm like, oh, that I've seen that scene. They've kind of played with that a little differently, or they've worked with the lighting a bit differently, or maybe even sometimes in the script and in the dialogue. It's like followed a similar format, or sometimes literally taken parts of the script that were in the film. And so I don't think people watch shows as analytically as I do.
I'm imagining Reem sitting on a couch and with a notepad and pen.
You know, sometimes it happens. Sometimes, like for me, all these shows that I watch, I'm often thinking about them very differently the average Joe is, which is why I enjoy it and why I end up watching so much. Because sometimes it's the music. You're like a certain score that's being used and you're like, oh, that's interesting. That worked really well in that setting, maybe. And you learn different things and you end up applying some of them. So for me, as much as it is entertainment, but there's an element of it that's useful.
Oh, wow. What an exciting homework. I should go tell my kids that you do this for homework. They would be like, I want to get into that space.
Yeah.
Tell me about this, as you were saying, the dramas and how you are analyzing all this, because there is so many creative elements, like from the costumes to the dialogues to the music. Now, in the live TV, all these things are not possible.
Well, they are. They're just planned ahead of time, you know. So in the similar way with a live TV show, like we did plan the set and the outfits and the wardrobe and the script. It's all planned. It's just there's very little room for maneuver once you're on air. So, you know, but yes, all of the same components are still there.
Right. So, and that's what feeds you to kind of do it, improve it as you go along in your journey of learning. So that's one of your bays in that sense of creativity.
I think also it's when you're producing a TV show, it's like, how do you make this really interesting for an audience at home? And so I think that's also, given that I watch a lot of TV, you know, I'm always thinking, okay, I'm bored now. What made me change the channel? Or why did that stop being interesting? Okay, that interview took way too long. So I'm very conscious of how I behave as a viewer. And so when I'm producing a TV show, it's a case of like, I don't want people to get bored. I don't want them to change the channel. How do we keep this interesting? So I'm very much someone who, if an interview is going too long, cut it. I don't believe in extending something for the sake of extending it. You know, you have to be conscious that there are so many choices audiences have right now. They can tune into anything they want to tune into. So if you're going to keep them engaged, make sure you're giving them something that warrants their interest. It's just keeping that fresh, keeping it engaging as much as possible.
True. And this entire interaction with you has just brought back so many elements of, like, not only just video, it's just about everything that you said, the creativity, the consistency, knowing where you want, what do you want to be known for? I think the biggest takeaway for me today is like knowing what you want to be known for and just focusing on that one thing. And people, if you don't know where Reem is, she's already said that she's on LinkedIn. So please go like, follow her. The knowledge that she shares is absolutely brilliant. So thank you, Reem, for coming on the show and making this such a fun conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
The first step to build your thought leadership is with a powerful professional personal bio. Personal bios can be used on LinkedIn as a summary, on your website, or it can be shared with others as your introduction on a public platform. If you do not have a fantastic personal bio which talks volumes about your professional experience and your expertise, help is around. JotMyBio is a done-for-you professional bio writing service that showcases the best of your unique self. Visit jotmybio.com, that is JOTMYBIO.com today, and get yourself a unique handcrafted personal bio. I truly appreciate you joining me on the podcast today. And to stay updated on the latest episodes, make sure you have subscribed to the Making of a Thought Leader podcast on your favorite podcast player. See you next time.